I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m.
This is Democracy Now!
Have you ever facilitated the sexual abuse of any minor or adult woman by Mr. Epstein?
I invoke my Fifth Amendment right to silence.
As global fallout continues to grow over the Jeffrey Epstein files, his co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell, refused to answer questions during a closed-door virtual deposition before the House Oversight Committee. She says if Trump grants her clemency, she will exonerate him. We'll go to London, where British Prime Minister Keir Starmer is facing calls to resign for appointing Peter Mandelson to be U.S. ambassador, despite his ties to Epstein. Then to the children of Dili.
Hello, my name is Ariana V. I'm 14 years old and I'm from Honduras. I've been detained for 45 days and I have never felt so much fear to go to a place as I feel here.
We'll speak to a ProPublica reporter who managed to get inside a Texas detention center to talk with children being held there. We'll also speak to Democratic Congressmember Joaquin Castro, who recently visited Dili and helped free 5-year-old Liam Conejo Ramos and his father from Dili.
There is a 2-month-old baby that's over there. 2-month-old baby that's in there right now. So there were many children just like Liam. And so we demand their release.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh. The Pentagon said Monday it had blown up another boat in the Eastern Pacific, killing 2 people and leaving 1 survivor. An 11-second video posted on social media by U.S. Southern Command appears to show 3 airstrikes against a civilian speedboat. Southcom said, without evidence, the boat was engaged in narco-trafficking. Since September, the Pentagon says it's conducted 38 strikes, killing at least 130 people it's labeled narco-terrorists, without providing evidence or attempting to make arrests. Amnesty International has condemned the strikes as murder and is calling on Congress to hold those responsible for them accountable. Monday's reported attack came as U.S. forces in the Indian Ocean boarded a tanker carrying hundreds of thousands of barrels of oil from Venezuela toward China. It's at least the 8th time the U.S. has boarded an oil tanker since the Trump administration moved to control Venezuela's oil supply. In related news, Cuba's government announced Monday it's run out of fuel for commercial aviation, prompting Air Canada to cancel flights to and from the island. The cancellations threaten to further damage Cuba's economy, which relies heavily on tourism. The fuel shortage comes as the Trump administration has largely shut off energy supplies to Cuba from Venezuela and elsewhere, as Secretary of State Marco Rubio and other high-level officials seek to overthrow the Cuban government. On Monday, Mexico's government acknowledged it had suspended oil exports to Cuba after leaders came under intense pressure from Trump, who threatened new tariffs against any nation that exports fuel to the island. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum said she was instead sending hundreds of tons of humanitarian goods to Cuba.
This sanction being imposed on countries that sell oil to Cuba is very unjust, very unfair. It's not right because sanctions that affect the people are not right. You can agree or disagree with Cuba's government, but the people should never be affected.
Israel's Security Cabinet has approved new measures which would expand Israel's power across the occupied West Bank and make it easier for settlers to seize Palestinian land illegally. On Monday, 8 Muslim-majority countries denounced Israel for imposing, quote, unlawful Israeli sovereignty over the occupied West Bank. A White House official told Reuters that President Trump was opposed to Israel annexing the West Bank, saying, quote, a stable West Bank keeps Israel secure and is in line with this administration's goal to achieve peace in the region. President Trump is scheduled to meet Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House Wednesday. This is a Palestinian resident of Hebron reacting to Israel's latest annexation plan.
As Palestinians, before October 7th, we suffered from successive Israeli governments. But this right-wing government, led by Netanyahu and the far-right minister Smotrich, has intensified actions on the ground. Displacement, destruction of land, land confiscation, killing, and vandalism. This government is a fascist government and wants to control all areas of the West Bank.
Israeli attacks across Gaza have killed at least seven Palestinians over the past 24 hours. Four of the deaths came as Israeli forces bombed a residential building sheltering displaced people in Gaza City, an attack that sparked panic and left several others wounded. Israel has killed 581 Palestinians since a U.S.-brokered ceasefire was supposed to have taken effect last October. Meanwhile, an investigation by Al Jazeera Arabic has found that thermal and thermobaric munitions supplied to Israel by the U.S. have evaporated nearly 3,000 Palestinians in attacks since October 2023, leaving behind no remains other than blood spray or small fragments of flesh. In Sydney, Australia, thousands of demonstrators took to the streets Monday to protest a visit by Israeli President Isaac Herzog and calling for an end to Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories.
Is, as most people are saying, a war criminal. He has incited genocide. He said there's no innocents in Gaza, including babies and children. And I just don't think someone like that should come here.
Sydney police were widely accused of using excessive force after videos showed they fired pepper spray at peaceful protesters, punched demonstrators, including an elderly man, and forcibly removed Muslims who were praying in the street. Dozens of people were pepper sprayed and 27 were arrested. Ghislaine Maxwell, the convicted associate of the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, repeatedly pleaded the Fifth Amendment and refused to answer lawmakers' questions in a closed-door deposition before the House Oversight Committee on Monday. After the hearing, Democratic Congressmember Melanie Stansbury said Maxwell used the opportunity to make her case for clemency.
Her silence can be bought through clemency. It is very clear that that is the message that she is trying to send directly to Donald Trump himself. Directly.
This comes as several lawmakers are criticizing the Justice Department, claiming that the Epstein files still contain major redactions. This is Congressmember Ro Khanna and Congressmember Thomas Massey speaking to reporters Monday.
I mean, what we're after is the men who Jeffrey Epstein trafficked women to. We want those names published.
Our bigger concern is that there's still a lot that's redacted, even in what we're seeing redacted versions. I thought we were supposed to see the unredacted versions, and that's because the documents produced to justice from the FBI, from the grand jury, was redacted when they got it.
The UN's International Organization for Migration says 53 people are dead or missing, including two babies, after an inflatable boat carrying migrants sank off the coast of Libya. The UN agency said, quote, trafficking and smuggling networks continue to exploit migrants along the central Mediterranean route. So far in 2026, 484 migrants have been reported dead or missing along the route. Here in the U.S., a federal judge has struck down a new California law banning federal immigration agents from wearing masks. U.S. District Judge Christina Snyder in Los Angeles ruled Monday that the law discriminates against federal officers since it doesn't make the same requirements of state and local police. She suggested the ban would be lawful if it applied to all officers and ruled in favor of a separate California law that requires all law enforcement agents to display their IDs. The family of Leka Kordia, a 33-year-old Palestinian woman, are demanding answers after she was hospitalized from a reported seizure while being held in an ICE jail in North Texas. Kordia had participated in the Gaza solidarity protests at Columbia University and was arrested by ICE agents last year for staying in the U.S. on a lapsed student visa. Her family and lawyers have received limited information about her condition. Texas State Representative Salman Bojani said, quote, "She's not been getting proper nutrition, it seems, and not getting proper sleep." He also mentioned it took nearly 24 hours for Kordia's legal team to confirm she was in the hospital. There have been multiple court orders allowing Kordia to be released on bond, but the Department of Homeland Security has repeatedly blocked her release. An immigration judge has rejected the Trump administration's efforts to deport Tufts University student Romessa Öztürk after she was arrested last year by masked immigration agents outside her apartment. According to her lawyers, she was arrested as part of the Trump administration's crackdown on pro-Palestinian activists. Authorities had revoked her student visa for an editorial she co-authored in Tufts student newspaper criticizing the university's response to Israel's war on Gaza. In a statement, Öztürk said, quote, "Today I breathe a sigh of relief knowing that despite the justice system's flaws, my case may give hope to those who have also been wronged by the U.S. government." In climate news, the Wall Street Journal reports the Trump administration is planning this week to formally end the Obama-era scientific determination that greenhouse gas emissions endanger public health. The finding is the basis of a 2009 rule that allowed the Environmental Protection Agency to set limits on greenhouse gas pollution from cars, power plants, and other sources. It's likely Trump's efforts to roll back the finding will face years of legal challenges, but its repeal will immediately eliminate climate standards for passenger cars and commercial trucks. Here in New York, more than 10,000 nurses who've been on strike since January 12th have reached tentative deals on new contracts with hospitals run by Mount Sinai and Montefiore. The New York State Nurses Association is recommending members ratify the agreements, which include salary increases of 12% over 3 years, improvements to staffing levels, improved workplace safety, and guardrails on the use of artificial intelligence. About 5,000 nurses remain on strike at New York Presbyterian hospitals while negotiations continue. And in California, public schools are closed across San Francisco for a second straight day after some 6,000 educators walked off the job Monday. It's San Francisco's first teacher strike in nearly half a century. The United Educators of San Francisco Union is demanding fully funded family health care for workers, improvements to special education, and salary increases that do not come at the cost of concessions or takeaways from schools. This is Megan Adams, president of Smart Union Local 1741, representing bus drivers.
We all live paycheck to paycheck. This is something that I know is a sacrifice for all of us, but it's, you know what? We all know that the district has the money. This is something that's been proven time and time again. They need to come to the table and they need to make a deal and get our educators and our schools back open.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York, joined by Amy Goodman in Los Angeles.
Welcome to all our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill are accusing the Justice Department of covering up the names of co-conspirators of the deceased sex offender Jeffrey Epstein as fallout from the Epstein files grows across the globe. Last week, the Department of Justice released over 3 million pages of files, but many contained major redactions. Millions of more pages remain unreleased. On Monday, lawmakers were granted access to unredacted versions of the documents. Democratic Congressmember Jamie Raskin spoke out after seeing some of the files.
You know, I saw the names of lots of people who were redacted for mysterious or baffling or inscrutable reasons.
The co-authors of the Epstein Files Transparency Act, Republican Thomas Massie and Democrat Ro Khanna, held a news conference after viewing some of the files.
Our bigger concern is that there's still a lot that's redacted, even in what we're seeing. We're seeing redacted versions. I thought we were supposed to see the unredacted versions. And that's because the documents produced to justice from the FBI, from the grand jury, was redacted when they got it. So we kept doing the searches for the unredacted information. It's the identical redactions that they have. Now, I don't think that's nefarious on the career attorneys that were reviewing it, but they obviously haven't gotten the production because our law says that the FBI and the original grand jury needs to be unredacted.
I mean, what we're after is the men who Jeffrey Epstein trafficked women to. We want those names published. We're not out to embarrass people. And the problem is we went in there hoping to see that in 302 forms. What we found out is those 302 forms were redacted before they got to the DOJ.
In related news, Epstein's co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell, who's serving a 20-year sentence, refused to answer lawmakers' questions in a closed-door virtual deposition before the House Oversight Committee Monday.
Have you ever facilitated the sexual abuse of any minor or adult woman by Mr. Epstein?
I invoke my Fifth Amendment right to silence.
Have you ever participated in the sexual abuse of any minor or adult woman?
I invoke my Fifth Amendment right to silence.
During the hearing, Maxwell's attorney, David Marcus, said Maxwell would speak fully and honestly if granted clemency by President Trump.
If this committee and the American public truly want to hear the unfiltered truth about what happened, there is a straightforward path. Ms. Maxwell is prepared to speak fully and honestly if granted clemency by President Trump. Only she can provide a complete account, and some may not like what they hear, but the truth matters. For example, both President Trump and President Clinton are innocent of any wrongdoing. Ms. Maxwell alone can explain why, and the public is entitled to hear that explanation.
This all comes as the release of the Epstein files threatens to bring down the British Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, over his decision to appoint Lord Peter Mandelson as U.S. ambassador, despite Mandelson's close ties to Epstein. We go now to Britain, where we're joined by Carol Cadwalader. She is award-winning investigative journalist whose Substack is How to Survive the Broligarchy. She gained international recognition for her expose on the Facebook Cambridge Analytica data scandal in 2018. Her most recent piece is headlined, We All Live in Jeffrey Epstein's World. She's also the co-founder of an independent news outlet called The Nerve, launched with five former Guardian journalists. Carol, welcome back to Democracy Now! I want to first get your response to Ghislaine Maxwell, the co-conspirator of Epstein, who you call in your piece a monstrosity, invoking the Fifth Amendment so she wouldn't incriminate herself, but saying if Trump granted her clemency in exchange, she would exonerate him. Can you respond to all of this latest news?
Thanks, Amy. It's so good to be back with you. I mean, I guess what we see with Ghislaine, which is naked transactionalism, the offer of a quid pro quo arrangement with Trump, which is what this was, that is a pattern of behavior which we see all through the email correspondence of Ghislaine, of Jeffrey Epstein, of what's been laid out bare. So I don't think that should come as any surprise or shock to people. You know, we know that there is a global trade in favors between a billionaire class, between people who are officials of hostile nations, between politicians, between people in Silicon Valley, in Washington, in Westminster, in Israel, across the Middle East. I mean, that's what these documents have laid bare, is this exchange of favors. So that doesn't come as any shock. It's really good to hear that there are these efforts being made in Washington to unredact the documents. It's really shocking. I mean, it's in one of the most sort of disgusting features, I think, of this data dump is that we can see that these young women have had their names exposed. And yet these men who are clearly involved are being shielded. Obviously, there's a big question about why. And I suppose my final point of what these headlines show is that it is absolutely extraordinary that we are seeing this heat and pressure on the British Prime Minister, who was not an accomplice of Jeffrey Epstein, who is not in the files. And yet there is this, you know, movement for his resignation. And I think if we get to a situation in which the British Prime Minister is forced out of office and there is across the Atlantic zero pressure, zero consequences for Donald Trump, who, you know, thousands of mentions in the files and a close associate of Jeffrey Epstein for years, I find that just, I mean, it's a sort of moral obscenity, I would say.
Yeah, so Carol, there was an Associated Press report over the weekend, which was headlined, Epstein revelations have toppled top figures in Europe, while U.S. fallout is more muted. They point out that a prince, an ambassador, senior diplomats, top politicians, all brought down by the Jeffrey Epstein files, and all in Europe rather than the United States. I mean, if you could talk about why you think that's the case. You've also expressed concerns about the fact that your sense is that this story, the Epstein story, has not been sufficiently covered in the US media.
You know, I've been really puzzling over this now for a week, and I've been talking to people and trying to sense check what on earth is going on. And the only conclusion I can come to is that, and this is extraordinary because the British press, we have so many structural issues with it. However, I think what we're seeing in this moment is that we in Europe are still living in some sort of functioning democracy. We are actually still living in societies where we have some norms. And actually what we are understanding here is that this is a disgrace beyond disgrace, that paedophilia actually is too far, and that we are having some sort of semblance of accountability in public life. And I think the most extraordinary and worrying thing of what is going on in the United States is the scale of normalization that is happening, in which the press is absolutely a structural part of this. I have been shocked, deeply, deeply shocked by the absence of headlines, by the absence of sense making across the US media that contextualizes what is in these documents, that helps people to process them and to understand them. And I think, you know, there is a sort of self-surrendering, self-censorship, which is going on in the United States right now. And that I find really deeply worrying.
You know, I don't think people realize, just to amplify what Nermeen just said about who has gone down around Europe. You have Mona Juul, if that's how you pronounce her name, J-U-U-L, the Norwegian ambassador to Jordan, who just resigned after reports surfaced Epstein had left $10 million in his will to her children and her husband, Brad Karp, here in the U.S., chair of the prestigious law firm Paul Weiss, Rifkin, Wharton, and Garrison, after emails reveal close personal business communications with Epstein, including helping with the job request and socializing. Peter Mandelson not only had to step down from the House of Lords, the British politician resigned from the Labour Party following the release of the file showing he received $75,000 from Epstein. Of course, this is what could bring down the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, because of his close relationship to Mandelson. The former Slovak foreign minister and national security advisor to the Slovakian prime minister just resigned after emails showed him discussing meeting with young women with Epstein in 2018, Joanna Rubinstein, president of Swedish UNHCR, just resigned after it was revealed she visited Epstein's private island. David Ross, former department chair at School of Visual Arts in New York, just resigned after emails revealed a longtime supportive friendship with him. Larry Summers, of course, forced out of Harvard. The former U.S. Treasury secretary announced he's stepping back from his public commitments, including leaving the OpenAI board. And Morgan McSweeney, chief of staff to the UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer, and Tim Allen, director of communications for the British Prime Minister Keir Starmer, just to name a few. And as you said, Carol, in the United States, we don't see anything like this except for the promise of exoneration if Trump grants clemency to Ghislaine Maxwell, who refused to testify. So if you could also talk about the whole issue you have raised of the connection between child pornography, the whole issue of, you know, what's going on the internet. You're so famous for exposing Cambridge Analytica and the pedophilia network, the sex trafficking network that Epstein was at the core of, that has enmeshed so many, though brought almost no one down in the United States.
Yeah, so there's so much going on. There is so much going on in this story. And this is why, you know, I wrote this piece because I had such problems trying to process what this story is about, because I come at this with a really specific journalistic interests and specialisms. You know, I've spent a decade now looking at Silicon Valley companies, looking at the men who lead them, looking about around their relationship with power, looking at how they have been utterly, they've had total impunity in terms of regulation and accountability. I've also looked really closely at Russia's influence across the West, its deliberate strategies to interfere in our politics and elections. I also, Israeli defense and intelligence firms have also been part of this beat, as has Steve Bannon and the far right across Europe. Like, this has all been part of the stories that I've been reporting on for the last decade. And what the files show in absolute clarity, in black and white, is that those worlds are all connected. And the thing which blew my mind is that they're connected through Jeffrey Epstein. He is a through line. It's not to say there aren't others, but this is what was the sort of stunning thing for me. And in some ways, you can look at him and he's almost like a one man sort of intelligence service, I would say. So that is all revealed, and it's revealed there in detail and complexity. And as a journalist, I just wanted to get to, like, laying down that evidence. It was like there was sort of scoop after scoop in the emails which are in those files. But at the same time, I think I found, I had, like I think a lot of people, particularly a lot of women, a sort of emotional reaction, I think, to what is also in these files. Because what it reveals is that there is a billionaire class across the world who are in close communication, who have connections to this criminal network, who also have connections through to these hostile state governments. And there is literally this sort of playground almost in which there is this hidden communication which has now been made visible. And I think the sense of impunity that's sort of just the thing for me which really came out of it. And that mirrors what we are seeing in the world right now, in these rising authoritarian times in which strong men rule and there is this collapse of the rules-based order. And that is what I think that this sort of Jeffrey Epstein almost personifies. We see that through him. And that there is going to be no accountability even for exposed paedophiles and his network. And I think that is a line in the sand. And what we are seeing is that these women are not getting justice. They're getting the opposite of justice. They're predators, the offenders, the men who are complicit in this are being aided and abetted in keeping their identities revealed. And I think that sense that they're not going to get justice as the victims of Israel are not going to get justice, as the victims of Russian aggression are not getting justice. And I think that realization that this is the world that we are living in now. That was one of the sort of profound things which affected me from my week of dealing with this material. And I think the other thing which it really made me think about is actually how so much of our